Welcome to Parents' Perspective. He came from a middle-class family of seven children. His father was a carpenter. He had an enlarged head at birth and was not able to talk until he was almost 4 years old. He was enrolled in school 2 years late due to scarlet fever and respiratory infections. He lost his hearing and had a high-pitched voice. His attendance in school was poor. He was stubborn, aloof, shy, self-centered, and disengaged with the learning process, and he did not seem to care about school at all. One teacher said that his brains were addled, even though he had an excellent memory, read well, and displayed perseverance. He asked questions and was a good problem solver. He liked to build things and wanted to earn money. His name was Thomas Edison, the famous inventor.
This biographical sketch is from a book called Smart Kids with Learning Difficulties, Overcoming Obstacles and Realizing Potential by Rich Weinfeld, Linda Barnes Robinson, Sue Jeweler, and Betty Rothman Shevitz.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about smart kids with learning problems? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests are two of a four-person team who have addressed some of these issues in a recent book. Sue Jeweler has spent more than 30 years teaching elementary school, training student teachers, teaching conflict resolution strategies to teachers, working with gifted and talented instruction, and writing curriculum materials. She has co-authored books and articles and has received numerous awards. She has a daughter and son-in-law and is also a proud grandma. Together with Rich Weinfeld, Linda Barnes Robinson, and Betty Rothman Shevitz, Sue has written the recently published book, Smart Kids with Learning Difficulties. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Sue.
Thank you so much.
Rich Weinfeld has long been an advocate for appropriate educational programming for all students. He served as Montgomery County, Maryland Public Schools' first full-time instructional specialist for gifted and talented learning disabled programs. He currently provides advocacy to parents of students with a wide range of learning challenges. He teaches graduate students at Johns Hopkins University and serves on the National Board of Directors of the Association for Educators of Gifted Underachieving Students. He is the proud father of two sons. We're so glad you can be with us today, Rich.
Thanks for having us.
What would you say is the difference parents and teachers can see between a gifted child with learning difficulties and a more typical child who also has learning difficulties?
Well, first of all, I want to emphasize that we're looking for the strengths of all kids. So we're not just trying to identify kids who have the label of gifted. In fact, that's one of the reasons we call the book Smart Kids with Learning Difficulties, in an effort to be more inclusive. But since you asked about gifted, the gifted kids who have learning difficulties or disabilities need to meet the same criteria to be identified as gifted as other gifted kids. And the definition for that is it's in the federal law and the No Child Left Behind legislation. And that includes to have a capacity for high achievement in areas like intellectual achievement, creative achievement, the arts, leadership. We believe these kids who have learning disabilities or learning challenges who have gifts have those same types of capacities as kids who have gifts and don't have the disabilities. So our challenge is to make sure we identify those gifts and find them. That is part of the difficulty, in that one way we refer to these kids is as diamonds in the rough. You don't always easily see the diamonds with these kids because their disabilities may mask their gifts. And what ends up being more visible to teachers and often to parents is the frustration they experience because they can't produce the way they feel they should be able to produce. And there's a real disparity that they feel between their great ideas on the one hand, their abilities in certain areas, and then typically their frustration with how they're performing in school.
If the giftedness of these students isn't apparent in traditional settings, how do these kids get singled out? In other words, if they have problems with the obvious reading, writing, those kinds of academic things, and the testing is very often connected with that, how do you find them?
Well, parents are often the first first folks to identify the kids, because they've seen the students outside of the school environment. They've seen them thriving with their hobbies, with their interests. They see how bright they are. Unfortunately, when they get to school, that gift is often clouded over or is hard to see, because often what they can't do is the writing, the organization, the reading, using their memory. And so that's what the teachers say day in and day out. So to answer your question, we have to get as much information as possible, not just use a more traditional test, but we have to have information from the parents about what are they doing outside of school. We have to get portfolios that represent their best work in lots of different environments. And within the schoolhouse, we have to make sure to bring in a wide variety of people, not only their classroom teacher, but we want to know how are they doing with the art teacher and the music teacher. How are they doing with any clubs or activities they're involved in? And then finally, in addition to the traditional testing that we might do for these kids, often an individualized psychoeducational test that really delves deeper and really looks at what the potential is that they have, how are they achieving, looks at it in lots of different ways on an individual basis. That often reveals the gift, whereas the group tests that schools use may not reveal that as quickly.
Well, as Rich was saying, that tests are not the only things that will tell the story about a child. And specifically, a way that parents can really add the puzzle piece to this large puzzle of the total child is by doing something we call OR. It's a framework of getting this non-traditional information that would be important to share. It stands for observe, reflect, and respond. So let me put it in a perspective, a parent's perspective, if you will. This weekend I was at a party and there were two young moms. And one of the moms was saying that their child, ever since he was very, very little, what he loved to do is he loved to make up songs. So he'd make up songs usually if he saw a movie or if his mom read him a book, or he just would make up these wonderful songs, and he seemed to love music. Well, if I was talking to a parent and said, okay, what other information can you get from that? Well, you observe. You observe that your child loved music. You observe that your child possibly was putting information into a context that was meaningful to the child. Well, then you can reflect and ask yourself some questions like, does my child, is this a passion that my child has that I can see really early? Or is it something maybe that my child uses to comprehend information? Well, then you can respond, oh, sure, I can take my child to concerts. I can get a tape recorder so I can tape my child and my child can listen. But it might have a real impact for school. Maybe it's a great way to study, a mnemonic device of being able to take that information, put it in a song. You know, maybe you did this with your child. I know I did, and with my grandchild, to remember your address and your phone number, and you put it in a song. But it's a great strategy, and it may be giving you information that's not in a test, that observation, reflection, and response that not only you can use as a parent, but it's something you can share with a teacher or with a school or with your child to say, this is a great strategy. Maybe we can extend it.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on smart kids with learning problems. For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Sue Jeweler and Rich Weinfeld, two of the authors of Smart Kids with Learning Difficulties. Now, I'm trying to get a picture of how it starts. A kid is in first grade, third grade, whatever, and he's either disruptive or he's not doing his work or something. Assume for a minute that the parents didn't come in the first grade and say, by the way, this child is very visually gifted, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just the kid is in school. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden there's a problem. And so then what? The teacher then recommends the child be tested, and then if things don't come out that he's gifted in the academic way that the test is given, it doesn't mean that he's not smart, obviously. But walk us through the process a little bit.
Well, of course, it varies from kid to kid what process exactly we're going to follow. But we always encourage both teachers and parents to be looking both at what are the gifts of this child, what are the strengths, and at the same time, what are the learning challenges. So in your example, the first grader who is starting to act out a little bit and maybe not being able to do the reading and writing that's expected, but maybe the teacher and or the parents are seeing evidence of how bright the child is because of his passion about dinosaurs and the way he speaks and knows every type of dinosaur and can speak at length about them. And there's this mismatch between verbal abilities on the one hand, written language on the other. That's when either the parents or the teachers may start to have a suspicion that, first of all, we have a very bright child here who's not producing, and second of all, there may be some real learning disabilities or learning challenges that are getting in the way. So typically the first step would be for the parent and teacher just to have a conversation, you know, compare notes, see what they're both seeing, fill each other in on what they're seeing home versus school. Teacher then might just try some typical interventions that are good teaching that he or she would use for all kids. At some point, it becomes evident that those typical interventions are not working. And at that point, the school usually convene what's called, in some districts it's called a child study team, in some districts it's called an educational management team. This is a regular school meeting. It's not an IEP. It's not a special education meeting. It's a meeting to look at what are all the resources we have available in the school that might help this child.
And specifically, you might have your speech and language person there, you might have your counselor there, you might have somebody like a resource person there who deals in special education. And sometimes you get the input from, since again we're talking about information that we can get about the total child, from an art teacher or the music teacher or a PE teacher and the classroom teacher. Sometimes an administrator is there. So that, again, you're getting the pieces of the puzzle.
And then from that meeting, again, we're looking at what new interventions can we try that haven't been tried before. And when we're thinking about interventions, we're thinking about how can we remove what we call stumbling blocks that are getting in the way of the student accessing their strengths and really showing their gifts. So how can we take away the problem areas and also help them improve in the problem areas?
So can then, you give an example?
Let's say writing is an area that's really affecting the student, as I mentioned. There are a couple of ways to remove those stumbling blocks. One is to adapt the lesson. So we might say, as a teacher, well, in my social studies lesson, it's not crucial that the child write. I really want to see what he knows. So when I'm doing a social studies lesson, I may ask him to just orally give me the information. Or I know this child is a gifted artist. When we're doing our social studies lesson, I'm going to have him draw a diagram or a picture that represents an understanding of the information.
Let me just interject. Let's talk about that mm-hmm. child who is musical. Mm-hmm. I've had kids in my classroom who, in order to share that they know the concepts and understand them and have the content, they write a song and would take it one step further to perform it in front of kids or even a wider audience. So it's tapping those strengths so that they can overcome the obstacles.
And then another approach to it is to provide accommodations. Probably the most frequently used for writing is to use a computer and have a student, first grade maybe early, although for some kids it's not, to have them start keyboarding their answers rather than writing it. It may be the motor act of writing that's getting in the way, or it may just be that given a computer program that allows them to easily correct their spelling and allows them to hear back what they've written, they may be more readily able to produce the writing. And there's lots of wonderful software programs that help students with their writing and reading for that matter. But to go back to the question, after some more interventions are tried, at some point we come back to the table and say, we've tried all these interventions in the classroom, we've tried all these interventions in the school, we're still not making the kind of progress we would hope to make. So we're now suspecting there may be a disability. Perhaps this child that we're talking about in this example, perhaps they have a learning disability that's preventing them from making the type of progress in reading and writing that we would hope. At that point, the school IEP team with the parents' input makes a decision to do assessments, to do testing to determine disability.
And IEP stands for?
Thank you. Individualized educational plan. And after doing the testing, they come back together, the parents with the school, to look at the results of the assessments to determine, does the child in fact have a disability? And if so, what are the goals and objectives that the child needs to work on? And how are we going to deliver services to this child so that they can make academic progress?
And also, what adaptations and accommodations need to be put in place so that as the child is in a learning situation, what are the instructional implications?
Because there are so many possibilities for each individual child. In our book, we talk a lot about this process, but we also provide a roadmap that's kind of a flowchart where you can see if this, then that. And if, you know, if I suspect my child is having a problem, what can I do? And if the answer from that meeting is yes, where does that lead? And so.
And also, the roadmap is not just from the parent perspective. It is also from the teacher's perspective. You know, my child is struggling in school, and the other side of it is my student is struggling.
How can parents help teachers to be more successful with these special kids?
I think one of the most important things, and I'll wear both of my hats as a parent and as a teacher, is the attitude that we are partners, that we are in this for the sole purpose of helping children be successful. And if we come at the situation with that kind of perspective, then it's non-judgmental, it's not argumentative, it's not going to be a confrontation. It's keeping those lines of communication open and recognizing that we really do have the same goal. And I think that's probably the biggest umbrella on how you begin to approach. And the open communication starts with a note or a phone call or an email in order to get it in order to get it going.
And I think it's also important for teachers to see how bright these kids are, which they may not always be seeing day in and day out in the classroom. And having seen that, teachers will come to realize and school principals will come to realize that if we remove the stumbling blocks to these kids being successful, these can be some of our highest achievers in an era where tests are so important to classroom teachers, to administrators. These are the kids that can be bringing up the test scores at the school given the right kinds of supports. The other thing that we found in our training and in our work in schools over the years, by far the vast majority of teachers want to help kids. That's why they went into this profession. If they seeming to not be receptive to parents, it's usually some logical reason, something is getting in the way. And it may be a time constraint. It may be that, you know, they have so many responsibilities, this is not something that they are able to or know how to put in the extra time that's needed for this individual child. And one of the things we've tried to do is give tools that are easily used by teachers and parents to really make a difference for kids. And one example, quickly, is called Bordering on Excellence, where there's a border that lists all of the interventions that can be used by a teacher for something such as writing, which is a frequent problem for these kids. And when a teacher is teaching a lesson, he or she will analyze that lesson and look at, am I going to be asking students to write? And what kind of writing am I going to be asking them to do in this lesson? And they make some notes in the middle of this frame about what things in their lesson will involve writing. And then all they have to do is draw a line to the intervention around the frame that may remove that obstacle in the lesson. It's a very quick way to find interventions, to change your lesson, and make it accessible to more kids. And we're getting feedback from teachers that this is the kind of thing they've been looking for, and it's very helpful to them in the classroom.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on smart kids with learning problems.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, The Popular Voters Guide by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Sue Jeweler and Rich Weinfeld, two of the authors of Smart Kids with Learning Difficulties.
The other thing I would think is that when we as parents approach a teacher about a problem, there are a lot of things we're dealing with that we have to sort of organize in our head. One is, of course, the panic. There's something
and
wrong.
And the frustration.
What's going to happen? Right. And they don't recognize my child, and my child's upset, mm-hmm. and my child is frustrated. And then to get ourselves under control so that when we go in and we see the teacher, mm-hmm. we don't say, well, this is mm-hmm. terrible, everything's
exactly.
awful. So the teacher doesn't feel like the exactly. teacher is under siege or right. under attack. Right. And so to go in more with a, you know, there's a problem. How can we work together?
That's that partnership. That's the open lines of communication. And again, recognizing that the goal is the same.
Sometimes it helps parents to have a third party with them, too, like an educational consultant or advocate who kind of help them to communicate well with the teacher, maybe get some of that anxiety and frustration out of the dialogue and really mm-hmm. focus on goal setting and help them to really proceed in a way that's helpful to the child. So sometimes that other person can be a big help.
How do you get such another person? You don't put an ad in the classifieds.
I think in most metropolitan areas there are educational consultants or advocates who are available to help parents to go to these type of meetings and help them to articulate what their child's needs are. These are folks who typically are not lawyers, but they understand the special education laws and policies, so they can also, as the meetings are happening, check to see that the procedures are being followed. Parents should be able to find these through local PTAs, through other educational service advertising that they might see.
I also think that parents need to educate themselves in terms of their child and the issues that surround what's going on, and that could mean, you know, reading some of the literature. There's some great websites. There are terrific books. There are all kinds of, there are people, you know, to know your school system and know who to contact to get the information. There are, as Rich was saying, you know, whether you let your fingers do the walking in the pages of the telephone directory or people that you talk to. You know, parents do have friends who, when you talk about similarities, who might give some information that would be extremely helpful. But you have to leave yourself open to get that information. Then you can take the next set of steps and control that frustration and sometimes that concern.
Wouldn't you say that teaching children or helping children learn to advocate for themselves is a big goal for parents?
It is huge. You know, we talk about often parents being advocates for their children. But I think one of the best things to teach our kids, and it's not only parents, but teachers work very hard to do this as well, to teach our children to be a self-advocate. To let the children kind of demystifies the entire situation. What are their strengths? But what are their needs? What is the disability that the child has? And if they know that information, what adaptations and accommodations work for them, what really works, and then help them share that information. And I think there's a very simple way of doing that, and that's just to role play with your kid. Whether it's at the kitchen table or in the car when you're stuck in traffic, if you say, you're having a problem, what could you do? Instead of, I'm going to go in and I will take care of it, what could you do? Well, that's right. You can talk to your teacher. I tell you what, I'll be the teacher and you be you. What do you want to say? And then through questioning, you know, if your child says, I want to do this, well, is there another way that you might be able to say that? And when's a good time to go? And maybe the child is very shy. Well, is there another alternative that, well, you could write a note that says, could I see you at lunch? Mm-hmm. You know, whatever it is. And that way, because parents, you're not going to be with your kids all the time. And it doesn't start when they're 16 or 18. You start teaching self-advocacy skills when they're very, very young. And absolutely, it's imperative.
I think it's important, the idea that these skills need to be taught, and they need to be taught over time. And not just that we can't, while it is very important, we can't expect kids to magically have this. Just like other skills, this is something that we need to help kids to develop.
And practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, we have used up almost all of our time, but before we leave, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue some of these issues further?
There's our book, Smart Kids with Learning Difficulties, Overcoming Obstacles and Realizing Potential, and we think that's a great source. We've had a lot of good feedback from parents about how much it has helped them. Another book that I want to strongly recommend to you is called Learning Outside the Lines by Jonathan Mooney. He was one of these students, and he was a student who really suffered through his public school years because his needs weren't met. But as he learned who he was and how to advocate for himself. He became a wonderful self-advocate, was bright enough to get himself to Brown University, and because he could advocate and form alliances with his professors, he graduated with honors from Brown and now is a wonderful inspirational speaker and author. So, and that's a great book. There's some great videos that are helpful for kids to see, for teachers to see. One of them is called Ennis's Gift. Another wonderful video is Misunderstood Minds that was produced by PBS.
When we talk about children and their strengths, it's good to read Howard Gardner's book. And Gardner's book is Frames of Mind, The Theory of Multiple Intelligences. And there are people like Linda Silverman, who has a focus on the visual spatial learner, especially in the world of words, if you will. There are some great websites. One is smartkidsresource.com. There is the 2E Twice Exceptional newsletter. That's the www.2enewsletter.com. There is the GTLD Network, and that is www.gtldnetwork.org. There happens to be LD Online, and that's www.ldonline.org. There's the National Association for Gifted Children. That's www.nagc.org, and Council for Exceptional Children, www.cec.speed.org. And in the book, there is a very extensive list of references that are books and articles related to this issue, and of course, additional online addresses.
Well, we are so fortunate to have had the opportunity to talk with Sue Jeweler and Rich Weinfeld and to learn about the book they have published with Linda Barnes Robinson and Betty Rothman Shevitz, Smart Kids with Learning Difficulties, Overcoming Obstacles and Realizing Potential. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Smart Kids with Learning Difficulties. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And mention show number 307. Spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Tell us what station you're listening to. Since we air all over the world, it's fun to know where you're tuning in. Our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available in all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. At the site, you can even hear a show at any time. Just scroll down to the topic or guest of your choice and click onto the words Listen to Podcast below. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or foundations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents Perspective programs. Parents Perspective is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today, it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Please send checks or money orders to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. Thank you for helping us continue to work for you. This is Sandy Bird and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.